Hey, everybody, welcome to the American Songwriter Podcast Network. This is All Heart with Paul Cardall.
Child, lift up your weary eyes. This world can be unkind. Don't let them define you. Child of God, tomorrow breathes.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to All Heart. I'm Paul Cardall, broadcasting from Sarasota, Florida. Those of you watching on YouTube, you can see the beautiful, beautiful ocean that is the Gulf of Mexico. And it's springtime. Flowers are coming out. You know, it's a reminder. Life begins anew. With everything we've been through, it's a powerful reminder that we are pulling through. We are getting through all of this. Today's episode is very important because Easter season is upon us, and The Chosen is a very popular biblical TV series. And we've talked to Jonathan Rumi, who plays Jesus. If you go back into episodes back in season one, you can hear that. Same with my interview with Dallas Jenkins, who's the creator and the director, the writer of The Chosen series. And today's guest is Noah James. Noah plays Andrew in the series. This is just a remarkable person. In fact, I had such a great time talking with him, the interview that you're going to hear, that we invited him to do the narration for my story, which is The Broken Miracle. You can check that out on Audible. It's a lot of fun to hear Noah share the story written by J.D. Meadow. You can learn more about that also at thebrokenmiracle.com. But without further ado, let's get into this interview with my good friend and amazing actor, Noah James.
Yo!
How are you, man?
How are you? Good, good. Good to meet you.
Yeah, what an honor, man. We have enjoyed your work. It's been amazing.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.
We had Dallas on the show.
He's Clark Kent, as we call him.
He's so funny. He's just everywhere at once. He's like a free safety on a football team.
Oh, he's everywhere. You can't get past him, too.
And then we had Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
He was fantastic. And we had a chance to talk about his career, which is kind of what I want to do with you.
We'll talk about
The Chosen, because everybody is in love and obsessed. And I thought it was so cool, though, that you guys end up, and I know Daryl.
Yeah, okay, cool.
So that you guys would end up in a Mormon set with an evangelical director.
Oh, it's everything. We got it all, man.
It's so awesome. I love it. And being in Goshen, Utah, all that stuff, that's cool. So we're going to get into that. But so, Noah, thank you. Welcome for being here on All Heart with the American Songwriter Podcast Network. You are a musician.
I am a musician. But you know, it's funny. I use that. It's like in quotes, because I grew up playing music. I started with bass when I was in fourth grade.
Yeah.
And I think I started with bass because my brother played guitar. So I couldn't quite, and he's 4 years ahead of me. So I was like, okay, well, let me do the other thing. But I was always a guitarist who played bass, I think. And then I started playing guitar right around freshman year of high school. And then I picked up the ukulele, which now I probably play most of all. Ukulele and acoustic guitar and mandolin I got.
I love
that. Yeah, but I always knew, like, I was in a band. I was in a Green Day cover band when I was in middle school, okay? And we would, like,
American Idiots.
It was before American Idiot even came out.
Okay.
And we would play at the, you know, the pep assemblies and stuff. And I always loved being on stage playing music, but I knew even then that when, like, my friends in the band would be like, yeah, you know, like, maybe we can do this. Maybe we can make this what we do. I always was like, no, I'm not going to. For some reason, I just knew that wasn't going to be my life as a as a musician, but I do still play as a hobby, and I, you know, I like to play.
Well, I see it sometimes on your Instagram. You're playing.
You know? Oh, yes.
And then some of your colleagues that are also on The Chosen are playing. Jonathan plays the drums. I think it's the gentleman that plays Peter.
Yes, Shahar plays bass.
Yes,
he's like a really... Oh, yeah, no. But he's a really, really good bass player. And we had a little cast party. We've only filmed the first half of season 2.
Oh,
and not in sequential order, just random pieces of season 2. We have half of it, and then we'll do the rest of it starting in January. But when we finished filming that portion in Goshen, Utah, we had a little cast party. And at the cast party, we all had our sort of travel instruments, and Jonathan got a, you know, I forget what it's called, whatever the box and the, yeah.
Box, yeah, he loves the box.
Yeah, and so we had a great time just playing kind of all night.
So cool. Now, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Tempe, Arizona.
Arizona boy, okay.
Yeah, Arizona.
The Goshen look.
What, would say that again?
You said that Goshen, Utah, the desert look of being clear down there.
Totally, yeah. Although it wasn't nearly as cold as it was in Goshen. That was new to me. And I've never quite... I went to school, so I was in Tempe until I was 18, and then I went to school in New York at NYU, and that was like the first time I had ever been in the cold, or even in snow. I don't think I had ever seen it snow until I got to college, and I have not adjusted at all. I still freeze when I'm in anywhere under 40 degrees. I'm just totally out for the count.
Did you choose to go to NYU, obviously, to do acting, or what is it?
Yeah, I you know, I was always a, and sort of have been, a procrastinator. And for some reason, someone had told me that NYU had a great acting program, and I looked that one up only, and was like, yes, it does look good. Let me only apply there. And so I only applied, which is like the worst advice anyone could ever give. I only applied to NYU, and I was kind of going, my mom was like, you know, maybe look at some schools on the West Coast. You're close. And so I was like, yeah, I'll look and maybe apply at some point. And so, like, not paying attention. So I auditioned for NYU, early decision. And, you know, flew to New York with my mom, and I go upstairs, and, you know, you're waiting with all the other kids, and everyone is like, it's the most nervous I had ever been. And I didn't even know, like, really, I was very, ignorance is bliss. I didn't understand, like, how many people are going to be auditioning or anything like that. But so I'm there, I do it, and then I get home, and I'm like, all right, let's take a few weeks off, and then I can look at the other colleges, see what's going on.
Now, when you're auditioning, you're doing like a monologue of some kind.
I did two monologues. I had a dramatic monologue and a comedic monologue. And then
Which one did you think was better? Comedic or dramatic?
They were both probably bad. I think they both were bad. If I look back, like, I would have probably said that my dramatic monologue was good. And then looking back, I'm like, what was I doing? Just very strange idea of how to be dramatic, you know, just not, but kids. And I always sort of had an innate, you know, I understood performance and how to be on stage and, you know, make people laugh. So I got the comedic stuff, and the dramatic stuff was, I don't know. I definitely had to go to school and learn. I'm happy they let me in.
But did you have enough life experience at that time to know how to draw on something dramatic and painful?
Well, I always knew that I wanted to approach things through the imagination. So, you know, there's a lot of, not to get like too actory, but there's a lot of different sort of schools of acting, and one of which is bring up, you know, painful personal memories and sort of link it to the scene. And I always knew that didn't seem like the way for me. But I went to the Meisner studio, and he's a really prolific American acting teacher. The big three American acting teachers being Strasberg, who was that kind of emotional recall guy, and then Adler and Meisner. And Meisner is all about living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So it's all using your imagination and putting yourself in the character's shoes, and then where there are gaps, that's where you start to link it by you just imagine using your pure imagination. And
Which seems healthier
it
than
certainly did to me, and it
because
still
so
does.
many actors go into depression, not because it's hard to find a job, but because you're drawing on so much pain and you're living that day after day to get the end. So,
It gets hard. It's almost like if you were trying to run a marathon every single day. You get burnt out like that, and that's going to be there for you. Like if you're doing a scene and it has a really tumultuous relationship with, your mother or something, and you have one with your mother like that, you don't need to do a lot of work to, that's going to be there for you. You don't need to like then on top of it be whipping yourself in the back, that's there for you. So anyway, to briefly close out too on the audition thing, I got home and I waited a few weeks. I took some time off before looking up other schools, and then I realized that I had missed the deadline for every other school to apply. And so then I went into a panic mode. And then 2 days later, I found out that I got into NYU, and I was like, "That's it. I guess I'm going to NYU."
That is amazing. God is on your side.
Yeah, it was something. It was definitely a and I'm so happy and thankful that I went. I had a great time.
And I'm looking at your IMDb, for those that that is the where you can find out what everybody has been in on the IMDb.com. So I'm seeing that you did an episode of Rivendell.
See, this was a that was a I have a lot of friends from NYU who are in the film, we're in the film department and the film program and stuff, and so we're always kind of making our own work in the in-between, to keep ourselves sane while going from job to job or trying to get the next job. And so that was a short sketch of Riverdale. That's the CW show.
Rivendell.
And it's placed in Rivendell, which is the Lord of the Rings
Oh yeah.
elven town. And so we were like elves, but going to high school, being all,
I've seen a bunch of these, like the elf who killed Santa.
Oh yes, that was
Breaking and entering. Everybody, the Apostle Andrew
Oh yeah.
doing
Oh, there's a
breaking
lot.
and entering. Knock it down. Somebody was missing Vivian. That's another one.
Oh, that was a strange one. I killed someone in that one. Oh, there was a murder at sea. I was in a boat in Long Beach filming on a Russian man's semi-yacht thing. That was, listen, I've done a lot of strange
Well,
independent films.
drunk hawk man. You are, this is a series.
That was a series. So that
Wow.
was actually the same people who did Rivendell. Drunk Hawkman was, Hawkman is like a superhero that's kind of not all that well known. And so the idea behind it was that it was a superhero who's kind of doesn't know what he's doing with his life. And I actually played the Green Lantern, who was his best friend, who he convinces to go on benders with him.
Is that your favorite superhero, the Green Lantern?
No, you know who my favorite superhero is? When I was a child, I loved X-Men and I'd watch the cartoon and I collected cards, and I remember when my parents are divorced and my mom got remarried when I was like maybe in second grade, and I refused to wear a tie at the wedding unless it had a Wolverine on it. And we found a Wolverine tie. He was my
Well,
hero
anytime
as a
you're going
kid.
into your parents' second marriage,
Oh
you
yeah.
have to wear the wolf shirt.
You got
You have a
it.
wolf pack now. I mean, you're part of the wolf pack.
Yeah.
Because
It's
life's about to
true.
get crazy.
Yeah.
And then you were Barry. You played Barry on this season's episode of Shameless.
That actually literally just premiered yesterday.
So go and watch. If you love Shameless, I've never seen an episode, but you can go watch.
It's pretty much the opposite of The Chosen. Well,
you gotta have a diverse profile, you know.
You're all
over the place. So, and it's interesting too, because for those that have watched The Chosen, we're big Chosen people. When we saw your character of Andrew, you're very soft-spoken, you're the spiritual one, because your character is the first to recognize that, you know, Jesus of Nazareth is the Lamb of God. You were following John the Baptist, as the story goes. John tells you to, you know, this isn't in The Chosen, but go follow the other guy, because I can't even latch at his shoes or something like that. But then here's your personality in real life. Like, this is the brilliance of acting. Like, you're so outgoing and fun and comedic, and yet you have this serious character that, I mean, you try to tease Peter a little bit, but it's like 1/100th of who you are.
For sure. No, I'm definitely a very outgoing, an outgoing dude. And I think that when I started acting, the thing that really made me realize that this is what I wanted to do with my life was the idea that I could live an infinite amount of lives in one life and experience all the things that humanity has to experience. And so, you know, what I looked at that I was really excited about with Andrew was I loved the idea of that brother sort of in the background, whereas I'm, you know, used to being on stage, used to being you know, as an actor. I like the idea of being in the background, trying to just, you know, work things out as best as possible intellectually, not the one to run into a fight. But
counterpart.
Right. Yes, exactly. But then when, you know, in episode 4, when I run, you know, all the way from John the Baptist and from seeing Jesus, it's like leaping right away. When that's, you know, makes itself known to me, there's no hesitation. And so I really, really just I was looking forward to bringing that to life.
Well, and that's what we see, is you have this conviction that Peter does not yet have. And you're there pitching him and trying to really convince him.
Right.
And you found, and this is what's crazy, is you found the Messiah that every person throughout history has been waiting for. Mm-hmm. And you just happen to find him. And then you go and try to convince Peter. And we all know, I mean, it's like Titanic. I mean, we all know what's going to happen.
Right.
But when you're right there with it, the great thing about this show is there's major character development. So by the time the ship starts to sink, we're going to be so invested in each character. It's going to be fascinating to see how Dallas and the other writers lead you guys down that fateful road.
Oh, we talk about that a lot, because, you know, if all goes according to plan and we're able to do this the way they want to do it for, you know, they talk about 7 seasons of the show and we're just filming the second. Yeah. That is such an amazing opportunity to really be with these people for a long, long time. Unlike when you see a movie of it, and it essentially relies on the fact that you already know the story and then you kind of see the ending. But this is not that. This is really experiencing the interpersonal connections between these people and seeing how at the end that could be so much more momentous because of that. I think that's the goal of the show, is really, you know, build that world out.
Hey, everybody, I want to take a break from this incredible conversation with Noah James to tell you about BetterHelp.com. I'm actually working out right now because I know how important it is to get control over our mind and our body. BetterHelp.com is an opportunity for those of you that want a personal counselor, a therapist. Maybe you don't want to let people know that you need some help. You go to BetterHelp.com. They will match a counselor for you that you can interact with online.
I come to a point where I can't manage myself and I recognize I need help. So go to betterhelp.com and start getting that weight in your mind and your body lifted to feel extra freedom. BetterHelp.com. Go there right now. Back to this conversation with Noah James.
So let's back up and talk about how Dallas found you, how you found Dallas. And I understand there, Andrew wasn't the first role that you thought you might be inheriting.
Yeah, so I auditioned first for The Shepherd, which was the short film that really led to The Chosen. Yeah. And I didn't know anything about it. No one did. It was just a short film and hadn't obviously been made. So I read it and knew, oh, okay, this is a Christmas short, and it was going to film over Christmas, basically, I think.
Did an agent send you the script?
Yeah, so my agent was like, go in for this audition, just like any other audition. Like, here's the script, go in tomorrow. You know, and so I read it and you know, really thought it was well written, and I liked the fact that it was a period piece, but it's also, it doesn't feel stale and old, and so that was really intriguing. But then it was just like a lot of auditions where I went in, I did it that one time for the casting director, and I left, and I never heard again. And I didn't know that I was, you know, maybe in the running for that part. And you know, the guy that got it also is amazing, and he should have gotten cast in that part. And
when you're doing this, they film you though, because Peter Dallas sees this stuff. Yeah,
right. They tape the audition and then they send it to Dallas. So I didn't meet Dallas; like, I never saw him. And then a year and a half later, I come in. Yeah. Well, I say that again. Sorry.
Wheat from the tares is what he's doing right there.
Yeah. No. It's. It's pretty crazy when you think about how it all happened, but yeah, a year and a half later, I get the call to go in for The Chosen, for the role of Simon, who becomes Peter, you know, and I had no idea that it was connected to the short film I auditioned for a year and a half ago. Again, like, I went in one day and never heard again, and I walked in and Dallas said, you know, oh, Noah, listen, we asked specifically for you. We're so happy you're here. And I thought he was mistaken. I was like, he thinks I'm someone else. And so finally I was like, dude, I think that you think I'm someone else. He's like, no, like, didn't your agents tell you we asked for you specifically? I was like, absolutely not. I did not know that, but I'm happy to know that now.
That's got to feel good.
It did feel good, and then you have to, you know, and then he's like, great, let's see the scene. And I was really excited. I knew that I wasn't quite in the target for Simon. Not that I wasn't going to act it my way or bring myself to it, but you just know when you're reading a part, like, my instrument, right, as actors, we are our own instrument. And I knew that it wasn't quite in it wasn't in the bullseye of the character. And so when that happens, when you get auditions like that, you prepare and you really bring yourself to it and you do your best with it. But you really are auditioning for the show as a whole. Yeah. And you're kind of going like, look, I'm doing the work and I may not fit this exactly, but hopefully there's something else here for me. And that's exactly what happened. He asked, I think at the audition, he's like, what do you think? Like, do you think of yourself as Simon? And I was like, I think it'd be kind of hard for you to cast me as Simon. He's like, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, but I think there's other, you know, stuff. I really like this world. And he's like, I agree. I'm going to be in touch. I'm going to send you other people. Let me just think about it.
I know. And then that's amazing. I know that Dallas was specific in trying to recreate people that would have looked like they lived in Israel at the time. I'm curious what your heritage is and if you came from a religious home.
So my dad is from Israel. Oh. So yeah, so there you go. There's the, and then my on my mom's side, actually both sides were Sephardic Jews. And so meaning
That is for uneducated people.
Yeah, so Sephardic Jews are Jews sort of coming from the region of Spain or around Spain. Okay. Spain, Morocco, Northern Africa. So that's so I'm about 75% Sephardic, 25% Ashkenazi, and and on my mom's side, family from Turkey, Greece. On my dad's Israel, Syria, that whole Mediterranean, Middle Eastern area.
Oh, beautiful. My wife and I travel a lot, and we've been Turkey, Israel, a bunch of times, and
gorgeous.
It's not only is it the best food, it's the best looking people.
Yeah.
It is amazing. Really is amazing. I can't stand COVID because I want to travel.
Believe me.
Places.
I'm a big traveling guy, and it's been a challenge to know that is just on hold for a while. Although maybe we're, you know, on the other side of things and looking at the other half, but yeah. I went to London right in February, right before everything shut down in March. So I got a little bit of the itch scratched, and now I'm just at home in my kitchen. Yeah.
So it's a miracle, though, that you guys were able to, during the COVID crisis, be able to assemble and film this, because there was no place to film. Originally, yeah. It was done in Texas.
Yeah.
That's the part of the United States that Dallas felt looked the most like ancient Israel, because he hadn't been to Utah, where I'm from. I'm from Utah.
Oh, really? Where? What part of Utah?
The ocean a lot. I grew up in Salt Lake City.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I live in Nashville now for some time, but it was interesting to watch when the dilemma came about, you know, what are we going to do? He was asking for prayers, fasting like he does. Then out of nowhere, you know, there's this set that was used for other productions of reenactment of the Bible and other... Anyways, it's been used a lot for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and their purposes. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize they rent that out.
They kind of don't. So it's actually, they really don't. But I think what it was they saw The Chosen and they really, really, it really resonated with them. And when they, I think they had that on their radar for a while, but they had heard, like, they don't rent. That's not going to be rented out, that set, which is understandable. But then when they saw The Chosen, it resonated with them so much, and then they approached them again after season one, and then I think that's when that deal was made. But it's I mean, the production value that set lends to the show is indescribable. It's so amazing. They just released a teaser online of some of the second season, and it looks so good, and so much of that is obviously the crew and the team behind it, but just the location itself is gorgeous.
And you guys probably recreated, because I remember when we left off, you guys had gone into Samaria, and so I'm sure there's some Samaritan scenes and things.
There's a lot. There's Samaria, there's... Yeah, I guess it's funny because anytime you say something, people are so, you know, they're so tuned in that if you're like, and then there's this area and they're like, ah, we know exactly what story is coming up then. So I do have to be a little cautious about what I say.
I get it. What was it like, though, to be in Utah for a couple of weeks filming just the first half of the season? Well, you filmed half the season just all out of order because you guys are going back.
Right.
First of the year, probably, and get back at it.
But, yeah, we're going to Texas next, so we'll be in Texas in January. But filming in Utah, well, first of all, the logistical challenge and maybe nightmare that was getting everyone to be able to film during COVID cannot be overstated. Like, they were working day and night trying to figure out how to get everyone to be there filming and also be as safe as possible because
COVID free.
Oh, it's just, and they did a wonderful job, and we were all, you know, tested. You test before you go there, you test right when you get there. You stay in your hotel room for a little bit, and then we were tested at least 3 times a week, sometimes 4 times a week while filming.
Yeah.
And then any background actors were filmed every day whenever they would come in. And so it, or were tested every day whenever they would come in. And it was, so that aspect was daunting at first, but then they got into a rhythm of it and we were able to be safe and film. Cause some of those scenes, you know, we're walking around a marketplace. There are 100 background actors and it's like, you can't wear masks when the cameras are rolling. So it was a challenge, but aside from the COVID nature of everything, Utah is one of the most gorgeous places I've ever been in. Provo, I would go, once the gyms closed in COVID land, I had to totally switch and just, I'm like, I guess I'm a runner now. Yeah. So I can't lift weights, let me go run. And so I would run around the neighborhoods in Provo and right at the foot of that, you know, the Y Mountain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it snowed one weekend, so there was the white and red and green and the mountains. It feels so special driving into set and seeing that and then, you know, working on this.
Amazing. I was going to say, I would imagine Jonathan was tempted to get into character and heal people if they got COVID. So, because I was sick when I interviewed him. I said, why don't you just get into character and heal me right now? He's like, nah, it doesn't work that way. Darn. Where's your faith?
Yeah.
Heal me. But it's awesome. So did you know any of the cast members before?
I didn't know any of the cast before, which is funny because now we really are a little family. Mm-hmm. And whenever you work that intensely with the same people for over a certain period of time, it's you really are a group and we, you know, we're friends and we get along very well, which is a miracle in and of itself, because you're talking about like 20 actors. You just never know what you're going to be dealing with, but we all really get along. And I met one of the guys who's coming on to be one of the new disciples. We met at a film festival out here in LA. I was in a film that was in a drive-in screening for a festival, and he was good friends with my co-star, and he walked up to me, we're in masks like at the festival, and he's like, hey man, I'm gonna be on The Chosen with you, like we're gonna be disciples together. And it was super cool to meet him before, you know, maybe a month and a half before we went and filmed.
He's not the guy that's gonna betray y'all, is he?
I can't even say no, because it's like, if I say no, it narrows it down. If I say yes, it clearly narrows it down. But I guess I can say, I don't think he's the one who betrays us.
Because that's going to be interesting to see who they pick for Judas Iscariot. And there was a Judas. People get confused that there were actually two Judases, because there's Judas, who, brother of James, mm-hmm. and then there's Judas Iscariot, and there's so many different Simons and Peters, and you know, it's like,
oh, there's some definite, like, for the sake of narrative clarity, there must be, you know, we even have that scene in the first season right away where there's little James and then big James, and we have that scene where he's like, ah, two Jameses, what do we do about this? Because it can get confusing, and so you want to stay true, obviously, to the source material, right? You don't want to be making stuff up, but at the same time it can be very confusing. And you know what, we all do look similar. We have similar hair and beards, and
I know.
So it's helpful to be as clear as possible.
What was it like? Now Eric Avari is in the show, and mm-hmm. I don't know Eric, I don't know where you've been. Eric is one of the most decorated actors of all time. He's from India, and he plays Nicodemus. What has it been like just to see him on the set? And were you in any of the scenes with him? I think you were in.
I had a brief moment with him where I lead him up to Jesus mm-hmm. when they have their big sit down meeting on the roof, you know, and first of all, he is like the sweetest guy, loveliest, sweetest guy, obviously unbelievably talented, but just human to human, so wonderful to spend time with. And you know, we were all at the same hotels and stuff, so even when if we weren't working with each other in scenes, we were around each other. We would have lunch together and stuff. And so him and I had a few days where I think we drove to set together once, and you know, we hung out at lunch and we had that scene, and he, you know, I was just asking him to regale me with acting stories, which he did, and they were wonderful.
You have to take advantage of that. You have to get advice, get mentored from the
Yeah. And he's just a lovely, lovely guy, and his work is amazing, as you see in the show. Mm-hmm. And he has an interesting, you know, he's had a long, long career, and he, you know, I think it's okay to say, obviously I don't want to be telling his stories, but he, mm-hmm. he's essentially had a semi-retirement because he kind of wanted to step away from the industry, and he had a major lifestyle change, but then Dallas approached him with the show, and he wanted to be a part of it. So he came and hung out with us. He had a big RV that he came in, and it was just like awesome. He was like living on the road for a few years, and just a really fascinating, cool guy.
Like Willie Nelson.
Like Willie, a little bit like Willie Nelson. Yeah.
The RV doesn't fly. They're faster, or gets there slower, I guess. Yeah, his style, that's cool.
But it's about the journey, man.
It's the climb, as we say.
It's the climb.
Yeah, it's cool. So music's obviously been a big part of your life. Mm. What was the first, I always like to ask people, what was the first, because you're younger, what was the first CD? I don't know that you bought a cassette.
Okay, so I definitely did not buy a cassette, but the first CD, although it wasn't that far away from where I would have been, like they still sold cassettes in gas stations, I remember.
Right, right. Those were the comedy club, the blue collar comedy tour.
Yeah.
$3.96 for the truckers.
My first album I ever bought was No Doubt Tragic Kingdom.
Wow.
That was the first album, and I learned bass listening to a lot of that album, but then also, so it was No Doubt, and then I started listening. Oh, well, I went off into some strange areas here, but No Doubt, one of my favorite bands still to this day that I listen to all the time, was and is Rage Against the Machine. Okay. So Rage was my jam, even as a kid, like fourth grade Noah listening to Rage. Yeah, exactly. And then Green Day, I had a punk phase in middle school. That was my Green Day phase. I had a very brief stint into the metal rock. I was listening to Korn when I was in fifth grade, okay?
There we go.
It was something, man. They was growling all in my ears, and I just loved it. Tiny kid Noah loved it.
Oh, yeah.
And then I mellowed out as I got to high school, and I started listening to a lot of, do you know Iron and Wine?
Iron and Wine's fantastic, in fact.
Oh, so good.
My publicist repped them.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic, and they are, I saw them in concert once and was totally blown away, and listened to a lot of Iron and Wine, Death Cab for Cutie, you know, going more into indie acoustic kind of stuff. I was maturing.
You're doing Bible movies now. So, no country music?
I never was a country guy. Arizona, you know, Arizona has a little bit of a country soul to it. Yeah. And they love their cowboys out in Arizona. But the music was never, it wasn't a big country scene out there. But I think Iron and Wine was as close getting into kind of folksy. I did listen to some more bluegrassy type stuff around that time as well. I forget some of the names, but in that realm, Calexico and Iron and Wine, I think had an album together.
Trampling Turtles, Mandolin Orange. These are fantastic bands.
I'll check them out.
Bon Iver, obviously. And
yeah, well, he's, and his voice is just like magic in your ears. So
it's amazing. Well, one thing I like to ask people at the end is, you know, you've had some amazing opportunities in your life. You've had, you know, some challenges because your parents got divorced. That always is very difficult. What is the one thing that in life that brings you the most amount of joy? And then, after that, what is it that you hope to accomplish in your lifetime so that when we're all gone, and these are kind of deep philosophical questions, but you're doing Bible stuff, so I can ask this.
Oh yeah.
When we're all gone 200 years from now, what is it that you hope people will remember that you left behind something you did, or, you know, what is it you hope people will remember your contribution to our world? So
wow. All right, let's take that one step at a time. Okay, here we go. Well, first I will say that I don't want to be misrepresenting my childhood, because while yes, my parents were divorced, I did have a very lovely childhood, and there was stability in, you know, I'm sure that's a little bit of chaos, but there was stability there, and I'm close with all my, you know, I'm close with my stepdad, my dad, my mom, you know, like that's all cool. But of course there were challenges, growing up. Maybe that's why I was listening to Korn, but I would say what brings me the most amount of joy in life, man, that is such a fascinating question, because I love celebrating humanity. I love, it's why I will listen to classical music or go see Shakespeare or listen to EDM as I'm running as fast as I can. Like, I just love the human spirit. I love what we're able to accomplish, and I love celebrating that in a group of people. It's why COVID times have been so hard, because even just if you take a concert, you know, there's something so magical about music being performed on a stage, and the rest of the audience is there experiencing it in real time. It's not on your phone, it's not on your TV. You're there, and there is a spiritual connection to everyone around you and to what's happening. And that to me, that's why I love theater. I love doing plays. I love seeing plays. That in and of itself, the performing music, theater, anything like that, that is a celebration of humanity. And that to me gives me the most amount of joy. You know, it's the same as it's a birthday party. It's a wedding. It's a funeral. It's anything where you are giving respect to, yeah, to the life, which includes suffering, joy, pain, bliss, everything in between. When you are taking the moment to respect that and be in contact with it, be in connection with it. That gives me the most amount of joy.
I love that. I was reading the Art of Communication. I don't know if you've ever read that.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic.
I haven't read it, but I know of, yeah.
Well, what you're touching upon is you are totally associated right now, because you find so much joy in everything you're doing. It's so encouraging and exciting, and it's what we all want to feel, you know, an excitement for life. And kudos to you, man. So oh, now that 200 years from now, when it's all gone, though.
Yes. Okay. So the 200. Yes. So that's a fascinating one, right? So to get back to that.
Living with Jesus, or you're living another good life, or whatever.
I know it's that's a question that will be with people until the end of time, right? Is, yeah. And I think that if I were to say what I would like to leave, you know, in 200 years, there's the one hand, which is that my job, which is also so much a part of just who I am, my job as an actor is to tell stories. And so to me, the highest mark of being able to do that is to really tell stories that are impactful, mean something to people, change people's points of view for the better, you know, and inspire empathy. Anything that I can do that can help even tilt the, you know, the scale more towards an empathic version of this
different
world.
Actors, yeah.
That to me, and it's a slow process, yeah. But however I can best help that, even in that, if it's being kind to someone on the street or telling a story that impacts someone, you know, very deeply, all of that I think is super important to me. And so I don't think it's so much about a name thing or an ego thing or like they must remember me. It's not so much that. It's anything. I think one of the things that we're here to do, right, is to make life better for yourself, for those around you, for everyone who will come after. And if we all do that, I mean, then the world's already pretty magical, and we can only we can get more and more so.
That's beautiful. And, you know, obviously the work you're doing right now with The Chosen, I've gotten countless people that have, because I've shared these interviews I've had, people are telling me all the time they didn't have a relationship with God. Now they recognize they need that higher power in their life. So you guys are doing amazing work just in bringing more meaning and purpose to people so they feel like someone else has their back. They're not alone in the world. And that's what's so beautiful. So you're in the process now, Noah, of fulfilling what you have just stated. So,
oh, well, thank you.
That's fantastic. So, Noah James, where can people find you if they're not watching The Chosen? You have an Instagram account.
Sure, yeah. So on Instagram, it's at James_Noah James.
Okay.
That's where you can find me. Huh?
Do you have a website?
I do have a website, noahjamesprojects@.com. And that's a website that has a lot of my actor stuff, what's going on recently. And I also do a lot of voiceover. So that is kind of the place where my, you know, voiceover stuff resides. Yeah. Hi, I'm Noah James. I am the narrator of The Broken Miracle, which just released on Audible. It tells the story of Paul Cardall, who is an internationally acclaimed songwriter and pianist, and how he was born with half a functioning heart. And the story follows him as a child who required surgery immediately, and then as an adult, sensing that his heart is starting to give out on him. It interweaves these themes of family, love, music, and just strength in the face of the most dire of odds. It's a really, really beautiful story. I can't wait for you all to hear it. And let us know what you think. Dude, and how do we, now we need to, listen, when all this is over, we need to, you will have to be carrying it because I won't even be able to play along with you. But we, at some point, we'll need to have a little jam sesh.
And I have friends who are like really good players, so we'll have to get together.
I'll hide in the background and just be
I love it, man.
I'm playing a little.
It'll be good. I'll reach out to you when I'm out in LA, and let's go grab lunch or something.
Definitely, man. I would love that.
Thank you so much for being on this. We're gonna pimp this out on American Songwriter Network, and
great.
We'll get to know Noah and get some more people watching your work. So thank you for being here.
Thanks so much, man. Thank you for having me.
This is All Heart with Paul Cardall.